Hi, everybody. Not everybody knows who I am. So I'm Marla. I'm Terry's wife. My handsome and love of my life husband of 50 years. And yeah, all right. We were very young when we got married. I was 18 and he was 21. So, you know, I always say he finished raising me because I was still such a little kid. Anyway, I was not going to do that. So just so you know a little bit, like a wee bit about us, we've been married forever, and we have two sons who you never see, but who was raised here. And I brought them when Tim was a year and a half old and Chris was three. And so they were raised in this church, and now they're in Idaho and California, and that's why you don't see them. And we have six grandbabies. So there you go. That's it. So I'm going to, like, hopefully not scare you, but I'm going to start like way back. when I was a brand newborn baby, like brand new, my mom was in her living room and I was in the bassinet. And my mom got this really strong, overpowering sense or urge to go check on me. I was her second born, so she wasn't like a nervous mom or anything, but she couldn't get rid of it. So she got up, went in the bedroom, and in the bassinet, I wasn't breathing. She says I was as blue as a pair of blue jeans. I was almost gone. I was on my way to becoming a SIDS baby, a sudden infant death baby. In her terror, she grabbed me by my ankles, jerked me up, and ran down the stairs screaming. And my grandmother probably called the fire department, which was right across the street from them. And the firemen were coming in the house just as she had gotten down the stairs with me upside down. But that jerking helped me catch my breath. So by the time she got to the bottom of the stairs, I was breathing again. But you know, God saved my life that day, even from a newborn, because he knew the path he had for me. I was his, and he saved me right from the start. So Jeremiah 29, 11 through 13, says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declare the Lord, plans for peace and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You'll seek me and find me. When you seek me, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." So a little bit about my family, how I grew up. My mom and my biological father, I'll call him Herb, divorced when I was three, and my sister was five. She's my only sibling. He treated my sister like she was the little princess. He treated me, as I say, like the toad. I don't have one good memory of him, not one, because he favored my sister and he rejected me. So, mom remarried when I was seven, and my sister was nine. Herb gave us up for adoption. When my mom's new husband, he was terrific. He was my knight in shining armor. He was the daddy that I didn't have with Herb, and that I desperately need. But I felt the profound rejection that a child of seven would have, not understanding anything, when you were given up by your father. I felt like I must never have been good enough for him. He never treated me well. And then he gave me up and walked out of my life. At the same time, though, I felt pretty wanted and special because now my new dad, like I said, was the knight in shining armor, and he actually wanted me enough to adopt me. And I'd only heard of babies being adopted, which was a beautiful thing. I never heard of a kid getting given away. And between my sister and I, it affected us really deeply in different ways until we became adults, actually. So Herb took off then for Arizona. He was out of it. He was gone. And he promptly started a new life of marrying 5 different women, plus my mother. My mom was the first. And had at least 8 other children and left almost all of them. So my mom didn't have anything to do with church in those days. She still doesn't. And my new dad was excommunicated from the Catholic Church because he married a divorced woman with 2 children. So his church and faith was gone. I had a precious aunt, though, my Aunt Connie, who was the only Christian. And she took us under her wings, and she talked my mom into letting us go to Sunday school, church, vacation Bible school, 2 years of confirmation class, which I made my confirmation class at 13. And I credit my aunt for me and my family seeking the Lord because she brought this little girl who felt so unworthy to church. So nothing I learned from church was reinforced at home. And church really was my mom and dad's babysitter. And so we'd sit in the front pew eating penny candy, crinkling wrappers while the pastor preached. Nobody corrected us, which I find amazing. But all those years I found church to be mind-numbingly boring, to be honest. Our pastor, I thought, and this is even after 2 years of confirmation class, I felt was the most boring human in the whole world. So the only thing is that after my confirmation class when I was 13, I didn't have to go to church anymore. So yay. Sadly though, all those years of memorizing Bible stories and scriptures, books of the Bible, all those years they never told me about my own salvation. We learned about Jesus and we had the felt boards and we had all that stuff. I could by rote tell you the books of the Bible, but they left out Jesus. And this little girl who was 7 and now 13, who wasn't good enough for her own dad to keep her anymore, I needed Jesus. I knew he was real in the Bible times, but I never connected him with my young teen life. But I did say a rote prayer that I learned in church every night before bed, just in case. So Psalm 62:5-8 says, "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock. My refuge is God." So finally free from church during my teen years with no moral direction from my parents, but I really think they just never got around to giving me any moral direction. But they never got around to teaching me about the dangers and temptations that I would encounter in life and with boys. And to be honest, I was very easily swayed as a teenager to walk on the wild side. I'd keep excellent grades, so my parents thought I was the good kid. But my sister was the trouble kid. So they just thought I was a great student. I could draw and I could do all these great things. And they never knew what was happening after school. So my sister was very, very troubled. And so she really got a lot of attention then because she called out the loudest. I was the kid who, when mom and my sister would argue, I was sitting in my closet with the light off in a fetal position like this. I was the good kid and I didn't complain. And now, having raised kids, I think that is so sad. It is just so sad. So remember, though, my sister was 9 years old when she was given up for adoption. And for her, she had 9 years with a dad who treated her like a princess, who walked out of her life and never looked back. So it affected us both very deeply, as you could probably guess, in different ways. Meanwhile, I met Terry when I was 16 and he was 18, long ago. Neither of us liked each other when we met, but neither of us had anything to do the next few days, so he took me out to a Three Dog Night concert. I don't know, you remember Three Dog Night? Jeremiah was a bullfrog. And after that, we still weren't impressed with each other at all. So, you know, your first impression isn't necessary. That's not true that that's correct. So we casually dated for a few years on and off, and we also dated other people during that time. He was not the kind of boy you would want to bring home for your daughter to date. Let me say, he was not. If you had a daughter, would you want? Yes. So, okay. But I brought him home, and by then he was kind of growing on me a little bit. He was a terrible influence on me as a teenager who had lots of rejection issues. Remember, I was the sad little girl who, you know, felt unworthy. But by the time I was at the end of my senior year, I was done with him. I felt I deserved better than the way he treated me. And the next time he wanted to see me, I was going to ditch him. Well, he talked me into seeing him one more time. And over dinner, he told me he had a whole different mindset and wanted us to start seeing each other exclusively. So I hesitantly agreed to give it a try. So after 9 months, oh wait, I think I did two pages here. Fast forward, we got married a year later. He joined the Navy and I was working in downtown Chicago at the time. And after a year, we married and we went to the very tip, practically, of southeast Texas, near the border, and that's where he was stationed for 3 years. And let me tell you, there's not much there. And I was 18, he was 21, and we were supposed to be having fun in our lives. And we were going to a pinto bean cook-off, and that was the fun in our lives, you know? But hey, there was a band playing that was really good. We found out later they were Santana. They had family in the area, and they just put up their band and started playing, and we thought, man, these guys are good. They sound like Santana. It turned out they were Santana. So that was at the Pinto Bean Cook-Off, so we we're glad that we went. So that's where we were stuck for 3 years. And after 9 months of marriage only, by then I was 19 and Terry was 21, Terry was diagnosed with cancer. He was being treated in an Army hospital 150 miles away in San Antonio. He was 21 and I was 19, and we were all alone 1,500 miles away from home. Remember, there were no cell phones, computers, none of that. And we couldn't afford long distance calls as an enlisted. I was terrified. Nahum 1:7 says, "The Lord is good. He's a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those who take refuge in him." So while in San Antonio, when he was in the hospital, I had to stay at an on-base facility meant for family members of people who were patients in the hospital. This place was a wreck, and it was dangerous. And the night before I arrived, there was a woman that was raped in the hallway. It was so unsafe. It was $6 a night, and that's all we could afford. So not only were we getting bad news from the doctors, but this is what I was going to at night. Alone at night, I would move all the furniture. I mean, this place was really a wreck, but I would move all the furniture in front of the door after running down the dark hallway to my room. It was in that room at night that I prayed. The terrible things the doctors were explaining to us was more than this 19-year-old could handle. We were young newlyweds, and it was just too much. But I asked God, I remembered God from all my church years, and I asked him if he's really, really there, could he come into my life and see us through and lead my life? He brought me peace and strength, and he carried me through. Psalm 62:5-8. "For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rests my salvation, my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is of God." So hungry for the word and hungry to learn more, I bought an easy-to-read Bible and began devouring it. I had nobody to disciple me or answer any questions, so I just read and prayed for understanding and direction. 6 months later, I was sent to the same Army hospital for a month. Half of my body had gone numb. They thought I had a blood clot in my central nervous system, which is 99% fatal. During all the tests, they learned that I had several malformations in my aorta, along with many other arterial defects. I also have an aneurysm in a branch of an artery going into my arm that you don't have. They told me that usually as an infant with only a few of these rare defects, they die shortly after birth. This is why I stopped breathing as a newborn. I was on my way to being one of those babies. But God. Psalm 139:13-16. "For you formed me in my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. And I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days what were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. We all know that verse. But as I go through life, I learn that I have even more birth defects. I even have two pancreases. How about that? Some of these are like really serious, like an aneurysm. But here I am. By God, right? So when Terry reenlisted for 4 more years in the Navy, I'm like zooming through this. So we were then stationed at Great Lakes, which is what brought us here. We bought a tiny little house that we can afford here in Kenosha. It was then 1979, and after several cancer scares with Terry, and after 2 years of tests and trying, we finally learned I was pregnant with our son, Christopher. It was a rough pregnancy. I was pretoxemic and confined to bed rest. Terry's mom died of toxemia, so we knew exactly how serious it was. And when I was 7 months pregnant, and very huge, I had huge babies, when Terry came home with the results from his periodic cancer tests, when you have cancer, you have to go through testing every so often. And so he came home when I was 7 months pregnant. We were so excited too. The doctor found something in one of his eyes. Brenda, you know about this. They didn't know if it was melanoma of the eye crown. Removal of the eye was the current treatment for melanoma of the eye crown. So Terry was referred to another doctor. He found that he had something in both eyes. The pain and the fear of this was overwhelming. He decided that even if it cost him his life, he was going to see his son be born before he allowed the doctors to remove both of his eyes. He was then referred to a doctor at Loyola in Chicago, and this doctor specialized in cancer of the eyes. He was seen by one doctor who he thought was a specialist, who made all kinds of concerning noises looking in his eyes like, ooh, ooh, you know, which didn't help how we were feeling at the time. But this doctor said, wait here, and then he went and got the actual specialist. Specialist came in and looked in his eyes. Then he looked at us. And he said in one eye was scar tissue from an old infection. And in the other eye was a freckle. He said, go home and be happy. So on the way to the car, I mean, I was huge and very full of water weight. Terry, we're crossing the street to go to our car, and Terry grabs me in the middle of the street. Remember? He picks me up and he swings me around, and the joy we felt, I just can't even tell you. So we essentially danced in the streets of Chicago because of our, I always thought that would be a good movie. And a scene in a movie. Anyway, he twirled me around and we were so happy and relieved. But through it all, God showed me yet again how much he cares for me and how much he loves me. Terry as yet had not given his life to Christ, but I knew he would. Because for 2 years, I prayed for God to not give us children, no matter how much I wanted them, until we would raise them in a Christian home. So when I finally became pregnant, that was my assurance that someday Terry would come to know the Lord. When Chris was 4 months old, I suddenly, out of the blue, developed a very serious infection in half of my face. Who does that? It was intensely painful in my face. Half of it was so grotesquely swollen, you wouldn't even recognize me. A specialist made room for me in a schedule the next morning, and I could barely care for our new baby. And in those days, the Navy didn't let a sailor off of work just because his wife was sick. But I knew I needed help very badly. The infection grew worse by the hour, and I learned that infections that begin in the center of the face can drain to the base of the brain. Once that happens, you die. So any infection in the center of the face is really serious. That night, I couldn't sleep because of the severe pain. So I rested on the couch, and I was praying for relief, when suddenly, the pain faded away completely. And it was a constant pain, and it was gone. I became flooded with such a beautiful peace, a peace that I can't even describe, just flooded over me. And I felt so cared for. I felt that everything was okay. And I knew I was dying. I knew that infection was draining. But it was so peaceful and beautiful that it was totally fine with me. I was just going with it. But just then I remembered my baby. And I prayed to God to let me stay for my baby. Instantly, all the pain came flooding back to my face. And then I knew I was going to survive. The next morning, the doctor actually yelled at me. It's the first time a doctor ever yelled at me, and only time. But he yelled at me for letting that infection get so bad. And he said I could die just then sitting in the chair. I refused to go to the hospital because of my baby. So he began treatment aggressively. But you know what? Yet God had his hand on my life. And he knew my future. And he overwhelmed me again and again with his love and care. Psalm 54:4, behold, God is my helper, the Lord is the upholder of my life. When our second son, Timothy, was a toddler and Chris was just three, Terry finally gave his heart to the Lord. Here, sitting in those pews. Ladies, I have prayed for my husband for 11 years. That's persistence in prayer. Don't ever give up. If you have a husband who doesn't know the Lord, don't ever give up. By that time, the Lord had led me to bring our little boys here to the old Lakeshore Tabernacle, and I had grown so much in my Christian walk that I was leading the ladies' Bible study, and I did that for 3 years. And I'm lost. So I had done that for 3 years. Terry totally became a new creation, like, who is this man, you know? And he grew very fast in the Lord and was soon chosen for leadership here at Lakeshore. And obviously becoming an elder ultimately. So as I said, our boys grew up here and they were very involved in youth and the music program. The boys went away to college, and at that time I was working for Kenosha Unified for 10 years when I needed a surgery to remove a rib. Who needs that? You know, but they had to remove a rib. So my job had become so stressful that I scheduled the surgery when I was the most stressed, because then I could get 5 weeks off of work. The surgery went great, but my brain didn't know it. My nervous system yet again responded in a very weird way. I was diagnosed with CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome. It's an arcing fiery pain response between the wound and the spinal cord. It needs intense treatment. I had 94 2 to 3 hour physical therapy sessions. I was put on so much medicine, including large doses of methadone for the intense, unrelenting pain. And I wrestled with God during many, many, many sleepless nights. I had to resign my job after a year off, and by then it had spread to both arms and hands. I've been to Mayo Clinic, a CRPS specialist for treatment in Los Angeles, and Chicago. I've had 7 3-hour ketamine infusions. That's huge. And prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. God had spoken to my heart many years ago during a really rough open knee surgery that it's the rocks in life you climb on. You can't get to the top of the mountain on the smooth side. You can't get higher and higher by climbing on a smooth side because you can't get any footing. You climb on the rocky side. You'll grow stronger and stronger and stronger by climbing on the rocks. I knew He still loved me and still cared for me. No doubt about that. He healed me miraculously from a broken elbow, this one, many years before. He showed me His healing hand and how with one touch, my elbow was healed. That was the first day I came to Lakeshore Tabernacle and was prayed for. I cried for 45 minutes in the parking lot because I was told my elbow was done and I could only do this and a very small movement. I came here in a sling and I was prayed for. When I got in the car, I thought, a little sassy me, let's see if it worked. So I took my arm out of the sling and I went like this and had complete rotation. And then I cried for 45 minutes. So I know the healing hand of God. I know it. And He did that for more rocky times later in my life. So I had faith that with God, He'll do anything. So my doctor was astonished because what couldn't be healed anymore was healed instantly. So I didn't have any answers for the spread of CRPS because I knew He still loved me and he will always be there and care for me. The CRPS eventually spread to my legs and feet, as well as my arms and hands. You'll never meet anybody else with this, and it becomes neuropathic within a year, if it doesn't resolve in a year. That was 20 years ago. But people, He loves me. He always cares for me. With all the people in the world, He reaches down and He comforts me. He's always the lifter of my head. James 5, 10 to 11 says, as an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You've heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you've seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. In 2017, Fast forward, I was preparing dinner and snacking on the rest of a bag of trail mix. I'd eaten the first half of the bag of trail mix, too hungry. So while I was making dinner, Terry was due home from work when I suddenly felt my ears close up. My palms began to itch, and I was starting to have an asthma attack or trouble breathing. I didn't know what was happening to me. Terry came home, and by then I couldn't swallow. I looked down my throat, and my throat was swollen closed. Terry sped me through icy roads to the emergency room where we learned I was in anaphylactic shock. Then it never happened before. Terry prayed for me as I began to convulse, and my legs instantly calmed. I learned later that the doctors had just made the decision to put me on life support because nothing they had done so far had worked to get me breathing again. I later learned that I had reacted to a sunflower seed that I had suddenly developed an allergy to, and a sunflower seed almost killed me. I mean, that's Marla's life. You know, it's like, whoa, weird. If Terry had been delayed at all in coming home, if he would have gotten another light or stopped to talk to somebody, I probably wouldn't be standing here. The doctors thought they were going to lose me. They told me this. The main doctor was a woman, and her voice was quivering as she told me they thought they were going to lose me. They had doubled all the medications, and nothing was working. I still wasn't breathing. But you know what? Yet again, God rescued me. Yet again, the Lord reminds me over and over and over again how much he loves me, and he cares for me, and he carries me in his loving arms. So when we're little, we sing a really simple song, Jesus loves me, this I know. Folks, as we walk out our journeys, and as we all face life's complicated and frightening trials, remember the simplest thing we need to know, like know deep down, Jesus loves you. Just like he loves me. He cares for you, just like he cares for me. Always hold that simple message in your heart. Always, never forget it. Always hold it in there. How many times has he rescued us that we not only know of, but times that we don't know? He carries us through all of our life's journey. I'm no different from you. Never forget that he loves you and cares for you, always. Now, that little tiny baby that almost took her last breath long ago is a senior. But God knew me before I knew him. He knew I was his own. He's carried me through so many experiences and people I left out, so many of them. But someday, I want to say to him, 2 Timothy 4, 7-1, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, and I have kept the faith.